Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson, who is nursing a Pepsi Zero Sugar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I thought it was regular Pepsi. I thought you had fallen off of the band, off the wagon, the no sugar wagon.
Kind of.
Okay. Zero Sugar is good. Have you seen, I don't know if you're doing Coke Zero anymore, but yes. Have you seen the Oreo Coke Zero?
Yes, and I'm an absolute no.
Have you tried it?
No. I have no plan to try it.
Somebody was raving about it. We couldn't find it in any stores. I was like, I'd like to try it. And Becky wanted to try it. So she ordered some from Amazon. And from Walmart, and it came in the mail. And you know what it tastes like? It tastes like Coke Zero, like cream soda.
Okay.
It kind of has like a vanilla-y taste to it. So she didn't really care for it because she doesn't like those flavored ones. I liked it all right, but it doesn't taste like Oreos.
No.
It's just more like a cream kind
I woke up today having this weekend mentioned to Miriam, I should probably not be eating as much as I'm eating right now. And I probably should be looking after myself a little bit more. And it's not because I'm wonderfully concerned about my health, which I probably should be.
Okay.
It's because I've got to that point again where my clothes are a little bit too tight.
Oh, and starting to notice that button.
Being the Scotsman, I refuse to spend money wherever I can. And I that's how I deal with like how to stay healthy. It's like, oh, I have to buy more clothes. Nope. Yeah. So I'll need to go back a little bit. I don't know about you, but I go through these seasons. I pretty much stay within the same 10-pound weight limit. Just go up and down in that.
I'm doing it more slowly than last year, but I'm on the decline. Okay. I'm just moving more slowly than I'm being less extreme, but I'm eating a lot better. I've started exercising more than I was over the summer. And so I'm trying to get back to where I was. It's going to take me longer, but I feel like I'm maybe at a more sustainable pace than I was. I had a lot more time last year for whatever reason.
I still remember last year taking pictures in hotels and gyms. And
I'm not quite there yet, but I'm getting there.
Going for lunch with Jared last year was miserable because you would sit down and you'd be like, right, what do you want? And I'd be like, oh, I'll go BLT. And then he would go, I'll have a cup of fruit. It's just like feeling judged.
I still order at Kate's Kitchen. Yeah. I always get 3 eggs over medium and a bowl of fruit. Yeah. That's what I eat. Yeah.
I think we went to, what's the breakfast place near? Big Biscuit.
We
went to Big Biscuit and I got a BLT and you got a cup of fruit. And I remember just thinking, well, this is miserable.
I wasn't trying to shame anybody or anything.
He was.
No, I was not. I was actually trying to be good myself. You know, we just did, Ronnie Martin and I just recorded the second season of The Heart of Pastoring, which is actually out right now. It should be out a few weeks, actually. There should be a few episodes for you to partake. If you haven't subscribed to that, go check it out. Seasonal podcast. So we'll be on, I think, probably through early February or something like that. But go check it out. We did an episode on exercise and he wanted to do an episode on recreation, and I didn't understand the difference because to me recreation and exercise is the same thing, and he's like, no, these are two different things. And so I got to talk about the recreation, which is more like hobbies and fun things, and that is how it made sense to me. Recreation is fun, exercise is not fun. So the exercise was about like actual discipline of fitness and health and
I did see some pictures from your episode recordings.
Yeah.
And I did notice there was distinctly more snacks and drinks available.
Not from me. Ronnie's a big candy guy.
Okay.
So he has a bag of candy.
Yeah.
Always. So yes, he did spread out like lifesavers and gummy things. And
I feel like I should record podcasts with Ronnie. I think
you would enjoy the candy.
The candy
and the snacks
would be nice. Yeah,
that's good.
I was a little perturbed because I was thinking, hang on a second here. I think the For the Church podcast needs a little snack.
Well,
budget
we had
here.
Some breakfast at home. They stayed with us when they were in town, and we had some breakfast. And then he and I drove in to do the recording, and I wanted to get a coffee, so I was driving through Scooters. And I'm getting coffee, and I was like, Ronnie's like, I think I want a burrito. It's like the dude's metabolism, I don't know, it works because he's just constantly eating, and he doesn't even think he eats lots of baked goods, lots of carbohydrates, lots of sugars, and he doesn't seem to gain any weight, and it drives me nuts because he's like 73 years old. all right, speaking of bags of sweets,
It's a grab bag.
If you're not familiar, the grab bag episodes, it's an occasional feature on the podcast where we each bring two surprise questions for the other to answer. We don't know what we're going to get asked, in some ways, we don't know what we are going to ask until like the moment before. But it's always fun to kind of see where the conversation can go. So I don't remember who went first last time.
You can go first.
Okay, I'll go first. Here's my first question. If you had to preach a sermon on the fly, mm-hmm. no Bible, you're just asked on the spot, hey, would you share a word with us? Would you preach a sermon? What text or topic or what would you preach? There's some background to this question. Yeah. At the FTC conference, Tony Marita told a story about being, I think, in Africa somewhere. Yeah. And he went to visit a leper colony with some folks who's turned the thing. Didn't know, but all of a sudden the guy says, our brother Tony is going to preach to us now. Mm-hmm. And Tony's like, I didn't even have a Bible with me.
Yeah.
And so, and I forgot what text he said he preached on, but it made me think, okay, if I was on the spot, what would I preach? So I wanted to ask you, if you were on the spot, what would you preach? What you got in the holster?
Probably, see, now you're going to make me try and remember them. But Philippians 2,
okay.
I'm thinking, have this mind amongst yourself. Christ is the example. Consider others before yourself. Put others higher than yourself and follow the example of Christ. He was the one that came. So Philippians 2 up to, I think, verse 14, no, 12. I think it was 12. Or then the other one, I would probably do the parable of the hidden treasure.
Okay.
Partly because I think the parable of the hidden treasure is fairly easy to remember mm-hmm. in terms of there was a man, he went into a field. But I think both overtly point to the beauty of Christ and the example of Christ. So yeah, probably Philippians 2 or the parable of the hidden treasure. If I had a Bible with me, I might have other passages, but if I have nothing with me, that's where I would go. If I had a Bible with me, I think I would probably do 1 Corinthians 15, probably both the beginning and the end together. Or I might even consider going towards into the Psalms, probably Psalm 1, which is there's two ways to live, the way of the wicked and the way of the righteous, the one that delights. But I would just know those passages less in terms of what would come to mind in terms of verbiage of the verses. So yeah, no Bible, Philippians 2, parable of the hidden treasure with a Bible, Psalm 1, 1 Corinthians 15.
That's awesome. Yeah, 1 Corinthians 15 would be probably, that's the one I immediately thought of while I sat there.
Yeah.
Because I've given talks on that, those first few verses a million times. So I thought I could do that off the top of my head probably.
I think 1 Corinthians 15 is just one of those passages that just, it just holds so much in it, especially at the start. I think why it would be helpful to have the Bible is to then go to 1 Corinthians 15 at the end, as in this is the gospel, but then also let us talk about, we did an episode on perseverance, but let us talk about all the way to the end.
Yeah, yeah.
1 Corinthians 15, our immortal bodies and being raised with Christ. But yeah, that's where we go. I've heard your 1 Corinthians 15 talk, I think 3 times maybe.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. You're probably going to hear it again if you come to PTC Sunday night with the guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those, but you never get tired of it. One of the things actually on that, while we're just on that, I teach an evangelism class once a semester here on campus, and I use 1 Corinthians 15 as a really easy way to share the gospel in less than a minute.
Okay.
Because I try and teach them how to share the gospel in less than a minute. If you have 5 to 10 minutes, or if you have an hour, as in you have different things you can do. And I use 1 Corinthians 15 as a really quick, I've got 1 minute with you, let me tell you about Christ. And one of the things that I said to them, I think is really important to add, if you have the time, is add in all the people that Jesus appeared to, because as part of the gospel message, we must remember that Christ's resurrection wasn't just some phantom story. How can a story of one person here, 500 there, 12 there, all at the same time in separate locations, different people all know the story of the resurrection of the risen Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
And if you add that into your gospel presentation in that 1 minute, if you can fit it in, it reminds people this wasn't just some random dude making up a story. Hmm. An entire people all over the place were hearing this at the same time and experiencing Christ appearing to them. So yeah, I think 1 Corinthians 15 is just a great, those first few verses, really great way of sharing the gospel in less than a minute.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, first question for you. You're, I think, similar to me, you're a high capacity individual. You can kind of take things on, do quite a lot, traveling, all those sorts of things. What do you do to cope with all of those things that you do. And I'll kind of give you a little bit. You mentioned once on Facebook, this was a while ago, you know, you were preparing this message for here, then preparing this message from here, and then you need to get on a flight that night, and then you'll be on a flight in the morning, speaking here, going there. And your just calendar was very full. How do you cope with that as an individual? Do you have any certain things while you're traveling or certain things you do that you just think, if I do these things, I'll be able to manage this workload?
That's a good question. Because I don't know that I cope very well. And I also don't think that I'm, you know, quote unquote, a high capacity person.
You certainly do a lot.
I do a lot.
Yeah.
That is true. I had a friend once upon a time in an interview who introduced me as a high capacity leader. And in my experience, the people that are like that, and I think you do fall into that category, Russ. I don't think that I have that same personality, but I do a lot. Mm.
So how do you cope with being doing a lot?
Maybe that's just what it means, that you do a lot, but I don't think that's necessarily true. The number one thing that I have to do, I mean, there's lots of little things, but the number one thing that I have to do is have time to sit by myself. Mm-hmm. Even last night, Becky and I were visiting with some church members, actually some folks who are going through the church membership process, they're not yet members, and we went and had dinner with them at their home, and she was describing how we come back from ministry trip or something like that. Or we get back even from Wednesday night prayer service or something. Then there's a lot of extroversion that goes on in those spaces. And she says, as soon as we get home, he goes outside. And she goes, it's not even a conversation. And she's like, and I know that that's what he needs to do. I don't care. I've got things I can do. And it's just, we're in a place in our marriage where like we understand each other a lot better. And it'd be one thing if I'm like never with her.
Just if I'm just an isolated person.
Yeah. But I do it often. I do it a lot. And I love that my wife, like, she just knows I've got to go sit and be still, and I've got to be by myself. And maybe I listen to a podcast or something, or watch some football or whatever. But, you know, and I'm sure somebody right now is listening going, oh, this is the, you know, isolated man cave guy or whatever. And there's a reason why that's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's and certainly can be abused. And certainly there are guys who are not present with their families or do not engage with their wives and don't take them out on dates or don't spend time with them or don't, you know, all those sorts of things, not leading their family spiritually. That's all a real thing. But that's also a real thing, especially for introverts like me, that there's just something recuperative. I don't recuperate from relational engagement with more relational engagement.
Yeah.
And I think that's the major difference between extroverts and introverts, you know, because introverts can be painfully shy. They can be people who don't like to be around other people, but not always. Yeah. Introverts can enjoy being with people in a similar way to extroverts. It's more depleting.
Yeah.
Where the extroverts I know, my wife, for instance, and other friends I have, they seem to get energy being with people. And so there's no recovery needed per se.
That would be me.
Yeah. I mean, that's recovery. What are you talking about? Like, well, where's the party? You
know? Yep.
And so, for me, it's just making sure there's some margin. I mean, just as an example, like the last weekend. So, you know, preached twice Sunday morning, immediately had on Monday. So you've got the typical Sunday, you know, hangover.
Yep.
And so I'm like, I'm tired and everything. And then 4:30 Monday morning, I'm driving to meet Pastor Aaron. He was driving me to Springfield. It's a 3.5 hour drive there. Yeah. You have a 5 hour event.
Yep.
It's 3.5 hour drive home. So it's 7 hours of driving plus the 5 hour event with lots of relational engagement. I'm speaking, I'm doing a Q&A. And man, I was just, so Tuesday, I'm looking at Tuesday and we had this dinner Tuesday night planned. And I was like, that's fine. So Tuesday, I can just putter around.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a couple of things on Zoom. I had like a phone call I had to do. It wasn't like I just had the whole day to do nothing. But I was home. But I was home.
Yep.
I had my hoodie on. In fact, when I got on the Zoom, they said something like, oh, it's a hoodie day. And I was like, man, I'm putter around the house day.
Good
and
day.
I just have to do it.
Good that you went with Aaron. 7 hours in the car. I feel like he knows when not to speak.
You know, he does. And he's an introverted guy.
Yeah.
We talked all 7 hours. Oh, wow. I do not think there was any silence at all. It was actually a really good time of catching up. Yeah, there's a whole side deal there. He and another one of our residents became elders like 2 or 3 months after the residency ended. And so he's only been a pastor for like 3 or 4 months. So I was trying to catch, you know, how are things going? How do you think it's going? And all those sorts of things. Yeah, I just know I need margin. I need buffer.
Yeah.
I got to look at my calendar and go, all right, I've got 6 days straight of you know, busyness. I need to make sure day seven, day eight is a time for me to recover and be by myself.
I've moved more towards just time with Miriam. So I'm someone that's
well, and Becky travels with me now almost on every trip. So that's the other thing I would say really is super helpful for me.
I was laughing with Miriam recently that every time I get like one-on-one time with Miriam during the day or something, like we'll catch each other for like 45 minutes during a really busy day. I always fall asleep. Without fail, I always fall asleep, which I think is testament to just our marriage, just how comfortable I feel with Miriam. Just the
safe.
You feel, I just fall asleep. And we've got to that stage where Miriam's like, do you need a nap? And I'm like, yes. It's like, okay, I'm just going to read my book. You can just lie here.
The last week, I've started going to bed before my wife, which is not, that's pretty rare. I usually, she's in bed by the time I'm ready to go to bed. Yeah. She's already in bed. So this has been rare. It's been I've been more tired the last couple of weeks for whatever reason.
Okay, hit me up with your second question.
Okay, second question. What is the biggest way that you have changed since you were a child?
Oh, wow.
And in what way, it's kind of a two-parter, in what way are you still the same? I mean, obviously the biggest change is you just get bigger. You grow. So but this, something apart from that.
In what ways the same is easier for me to answer?
Okay.
I'm an incredibly driven person. I always want to be achieving, always moving forward. I don't find my salvation in it or anything like that. Just the way I'm wired, I press on constantly. We watched West Wing 2 or 3 times actually as a couple over the years, and President Bartlet always has this phrase. He says, "What's next?" And when he says "What's next," there's a scene in one of the episodes where he's very clear. When I say "What's next," I mean we're going on to the next thing, and he just keeps moving.
Okay.
That's how I am with life. I've always been like that. What's next? What's the next thing we're doing? I love what we're doing now. It's finished. What's next? It drives Miriam crazy because we're all over the place. We do so many things. Just even next week, I have so many things on. As soon as that week's done, I'll be like, what's next? And I've always been like that. As a kid, I was always interested where we're going as a family. I think it came from a negative thing. So I think it came from when my dad was ill, I was always concerned about, you know, what was the next hospital appointment? What was next in our lives? Trying to understand where we were going or where we were meant to be. So I think it came from something negative of always needing to know where we were as a family and what was happening. But I think it developed into a positive thing of I just have the ability to be, okay, right, we're done that. Let's go. What's the next thing? And just like even when you mentioned PTC just a few moments ago, our pastoral training center at Liberty, when I completed it out, almost the next day. So I think the Sunday was the last session. On the Monday morning, I turned to Miriam and went, okay, what's next? And she was like, a break? So I don't know if that is something I can do. What's next?
That's a high capacity leader, man.
Yeah. So that's the way I've been the same. And I've been like that for, you know, over 20 years now. Yeah. I've been kind of like, and I don't feel myself changing in that. I've learned that sometimes the what's next is actually nothing. A couple hours of chill downtime. Notice I said a couple hours. A
couple hours.
Not days or weeks. A
couple of days, man.
We were flying back recently from Oregon and Miriam just like, how do we end up in places like this? And I was like, I don't know. You keep demanding us doing things. She's like, me? You're the one always going, what's next?
What's next?
In terms of the biggest change, I would say fear. I was very fearful as a teenager. I was very fearful even in our early marriage with Miriam and I's marriage. I always thought the worst thing could happen. And the thing is, again, talking about my past, that kind of was my childhood. The worst things did happen. Not always, but there was definitely some major things. So I lived in a kind of constant sense of fear. Not fear that crippled me. I was always doing the what's next, but fear that would just silently sit inside me, kind of silently killed the joy within me. And even in our first couple of years of the first year of dating and then first year of marriage, this is something Miriam and I have talked about. I was always fearful that Miriam would leave, that Miriam would like somebody else more, that maybe she didn't want to be married to me. She never gave me any signs of that. Right. It was just that internal, the worst thing might happen.
Yeah.
And I found it really difficult in my early 20s to not think in that way. So if we flew somewhere, we're going to die in the plane. If we drove somewhere, we're going to be in an accident. If somebody really enjoys being with our family and we become friends, they're going to leave us being friends. And when I moved into ministry, it was kind of that as well, early ministry of just, if I preach a bad sermon, they're going to fire me. And I just had this kind of constant level of fear. I would say in the last 5 years, that's where I've massively seen a change. I think as a kid, that was the peak of the fear, kind of teenage, early 20s. But I think over the years, I've slowly moved away from it. I think I'm still somebody that goes, what's wrong and how do I fix that? So I usually see the negative before I see the positive. But the fear has kind of been removed from that now.
Okay.
I don't panic as much that the worst thing might happen. I might go, how do we guard from the worst thing? But I'm no longer thinking the worst thing will happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, fear is the thing that is not as, it's still part of my life, but it's not, it's probably been the greatest change of being able to just go, sure, why not? Let's go and do this. You know, let's move to America. Let's just study a degree. Let's do these things because I'm less fearful that it's all going to go wrong.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, we've probably talked about this before, but in Inside Out 2, you saw it?
Yeah.
Where the anxiety character, I just thought it was really insightful. Obviously, the anxiety character, when it's running the show.
Yes.
You're everything. A fear-driven mess. Yep. You're just an anxious mess. But when you know, the anxiety is a character and they're like, why are you like this? And it's like, I'm trying to protect her.
Yes.
And like, oh, that's what anxiety, it has the guise of, or at its core, it's about rational fears, but that turn irrational.
Yes.
It's what if the worst happens? But and what you just described is, so now I'm sort of, let's prepare for that. But I'm not going to let a fear about that or a paranoia about that direct my emotions and affections and those sorts of things.
Inside Out 2, they also show how joy can actually kind of skew everything, where joy makes everything perfect and anxiety makes everything bad. But actually, it's the mix of the two. And I think over the years, I've tried to learn the mix of the two, that some things going bad doesn't mean everything is
that's good.
Going to go dreadfully.
Yeah.
I've struggled between two questions.
Okay. I've got a bonus question as well.
Okay. So we might do a bonus question then. Okay. So you've trained multiple guys over the years. You've gone through classes here at Midwestern. You trained guys through that. You've also done the Pastoral Training Center as well at Liberty. And so you've fed into the next generation. What's one of the things that a graduate, so someone that's left the seminary or left the PTC, has done that you've just went, wow, I get to do this. I get to train these guys. This is incredible. What's maybe something that you look at in their lives they've done for you, or maybe they've done in ministry, that you just think, this blessing is overwhelming that I get to do this? Because I think we always talk about the trials of, man, trying to get them to understand this. But what about just the beauty of seeing someone do something for you or for the church or for the kingdom that you just think, wow, that's incredible. I get to do this.
Yeah. Well, it's not, it's not any one specific or specific experience, but when I see the guys who have gone through serving faithfully in churches around the country, even, you know, we have a former resident who's, you know, serving in, in Canada, where they speak French. Montreal. I needed more caffeine, I suppose. He's serving in Montreal. And when I see just things like that, and I have a window into their ministries, that's really affirming. It's sort of like, oh, like, man, we're like, you train these arrows up and you send them out. And they're serving and they're preaching the gospel. I mean, you know, when I'm thinking about guys like Logan Bennett and Colin Coffey, who are serving as lead pastors in churches and, you know, that kind of experience, you know, when I think of guys like in the very first residency, we had three guys who came from the outside that we didn't have any background with.
Yeah.
So I didn't know them previously. I'm just looking at their applications. And obviously we assess them and all, you know, an interview, but like they're not known quantities like the guys who were already in the church are known quantities. Quantities. There were guys in the church that were like, oh, yeah, of course Tyler should be in this.
Yeah,
course Brandon should be in this.
Yeah.
But then there's these guys from the outside and you're kind of going, okay, which of these guys do you think? And in a way they're taking a gamble on us, but I'm taking a gamble on them.
Yeah.
And those three guys were Taylor Kane, CJ Moore, and Paul Gandy.
Yeah.
And I wanted Paul mainly because he was coming from Vermont and I came from Vermont. And I was like, I don't care. This guy may be, you know, he may be terrible, but I want him because he's from Vermont. you know, CJ basically said, I'm accepted to Midwestern and I'm accepted to Southern, but I'll come to Midwestern if I get into the Pastoral Training Center at Liberty Baptist Church. And and I thought, oh, this guy's got something. And Taylor King came from Arkansas. And then when those guys eventually, Taylor became our director of student ministry at the church, you know, post-PTC. Paul and CJ became elders at our church post-PTC. CJ is now serving a church as a pastor in Mississippi. Paul is currently a pastor at our church still. He's now a vocational pastor at our church and is our essentially our worship leader, but does other things besides, oversees missions and those sorts of things. That's just really gratifying.
Yeah.
Just to think like there's a little piece of me. I'm not the reason these guys are awesome. Yeah. They were awesome. But that I got to speak into that and kind of help, you know, shape that a little bit.
Yeah.
That's really gratifying to me. That's, I think the thing is just it, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Which means you're doing what you're meant to be doing.
Yeah.
Like if you were producing guys that just had consistent problems or weren't serving or weren't going into those roles, you would start to question
it's
what you're
doing.
It's
better than, I mean, when I even just think about like the guys who have impacted me the most that I just love the most, the guys are like when they, if when they pass, I want to be at their funerals, assuming they pass before I do.
Yeah.
It's different than like the guy whose books I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like I profit from all of that. But that's different than like a guy who served as a spiritual father or just someone who spoke into my life at a key time in ministry. And I would prefer that,
you know,
than to someone just be a fan of my books or whatever. The personal actually helping what's impacting different churches, that to me is, I think, you know what that's that's what I need. That's gratifying.
It's interesting. As I'm getting older and longer in ministry, I desire that more than where I think when I first came into ministry, it was like, okay, I can make a difference in this church. And I feel like as the years go by and I get the sense you're the same, actually the desire to train the next generation grows and you start realizing, actually, I could be forgotten. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like, let's see how we can, as you say, ping the arrows
out
further.
It's how you extend your ministry and extend your legacy, you know, however you want to think of legacy. That's how you do it. It's not by writing a best-selling book or building a huge church for yourself. And it's like being able to pass the baton and as to train and develop leaders as much as you can. And now you've got all these folks that you've been able to kind of speak into their life a little bit. And that's really, it's awesome. All right. I've got a bonus question.
I got a bonus
one. It's a fun one. I hope your bonus one is a fun one.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So maybe I wonder if we should end on mine because it's fun.
Okay.
Is yours not fun?
It's nice.
Okay, let's hear what the nice bonus question is.
I was just going to say, what is your favorite thing about our church?
Oh, wow.
No qualification, just what's your favorite thing?
Favorite thing about our church, I was just telling somebody about this morning. I was meeting with a PTC guy this morning. And the same thing I was saying to that family last night, continuing the conversation. Our church has been remarkably, and I attribute this to God, but also by God's grace to the people of our church, remarkably free from weirdness.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see that.
Let me see if I can like characterize the weirdness. 3 weeks ago, I got email from a guy. Actually, it might've been a mailbag. I don't remember if it was a question emailed or I think it was on social media that he DM'd me, but it was for the mailbag. And he basically said, what do I do? Oh, we might've answered it. Actually, it was about Shepherds for Sale. Did we?
We did. We did.
His question was basically, what do I do with all these guys showing up with asking questions about, you know, Shepherds for Sale? And I just remember thinking like, from experience, I don't know.
We don't have that.
Because we don't have
that. We don't do that.
And I started thinking about like, we don't have a bunch of guys on social media.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a few guys that have like an Instagram or, you know, if they have Twitter, they're not really on there.
No.
And it's just not a phenomenon at our church. And we have a lot of young guys and guys who should be in that demo of mixing it up all day, every day on Twitter and Facebook. And
so are we
YouTube.
Weird because we don't have that?
Well, and just yesterday, you know, at Monday when I was at this event in Springfield, one of the guys during a Q&A basically asked, how are you responding at your church to the Moscow mood? And I don't want to have to explain what the Moscow mood is, but it's a similar question. It's a parallel question to the Shepherds for Sale. And I just said, we're not. Like, that's not a thing at our church.
Yeah.
Except we have all these. Like, we have the demo. It's not like we have all these out-of-touch people.
Yeah.
We have you know, people who would be the target demo for Moscow Mood and Shepherds for Sale.
Yeah.
But we just, they don't have those issues. And I'm even thinking 2 years ago, brother, when our lead pastor disqualified himself and our church was really hurt and really like at a crossroads in some ways, like, what are we going to do? In a lot of churches, a lot of people leave for a variety of reasons. That church is broken.
Yeah.
They're damaged goods now, or the elders weren't, you know, good enough to, you know, to prevent that. I'm going to go someplace else. Or 2 years without a lead pastor, people leave because they're like, who knows where they're going to go.
Or things go crazy in that 2 years of different decisions and things.
And we just didn't see that. People stuck around. And it's not like everyone thought it was not a big deal or anything, but by and large, it's just, it's just a very peaceful. And so I asked the guy this morning, and I'll say his name. I asked Jacob Ward this morning. I was like, why do you think that is? I was like, first of all, do you agree that this is like our church is uniquely a peaceful place? It's not, we're not perfect, you know, by any stretch, but a uniquely sort of peaceable people. He said, yes. And I said, why do you think that is? And he said, he thinks it's because of gospel centrality.
Yeah.
The center of the church is not some
it's
of these
issues. It's not the hot topic issue.
It's Christ.
Yeah.
And so the people who are attracted to that are the people who want Christ as the center of things. I think he's right. I hope he's right. But that's what I love most about our church. I love a lot of things, but that's what I love.
Yeah. So bonus question.
Bonus question, man. This is way out of left field. And I heard this on a podcast not too long ago, and I thought, that's a good question for a grab bag. But I knew it was too silly to be a main question.
I'll try and give a good answer.
So here's my bonus question. If you were a transformer.
Oh, my word.
What would you transform into?
You know, you asked me last time, one time, I was like, if you had a superhero power, and I said invisibility, and everyone said I was a creep. So I don't even know how
to be very careful. People won't think you're a pervert.
If I was a transformer, I wanted to transform into.
Yeah.
It's a boring answer.
No, why would it be boring?
A Mazda MX-5 car.
All right.
It's my favorite car.
Mazda MX-5.
I've never driven one.
Okay.
I would love to drive one. But
what's unique about the MX-5? I have a Mazda CX-5.
The Mazda MX-5 is a two-seater. Right. It's small. It's on the basically on the road, tiny little car.
Okay.
When I was a kid, it had the flap-up lights, so you press a button. They got rid of them, but it's a tiny little car. It looks cool. It sounds cool. I'm pretty sure it'll drive cool. And I think the idea of just like transforming into a Mazda MX-5 and driving a coastal road. That sounds idyllic
like
to me.
The Scottish Transformer.
Yeah,
I mean, ask you what your name would be, but
it's pretty boring. Just moving
Fergusatron or something.
So just
Ferguson.
No. Let's not do this. Let's not do
Ferguson Transformer.
Let's not do this. What would yours be?
Oh, I don't know. If it was like a car or something,
no, just anything.
It'd be very similar.
Okay,
I was thinking like I don't know which car was. It was a Porsche or the car from Ferris Bueller. That they stole from Cameron's dad. It's a little red. I can't believe it. I don't remember what it is. I'm pretty sure it's a Porsche. But it would be something like that. Yeah. But when I was a kid, I wanted the Transformer. His name is Soundwave. And he's a tape player. He's like a Walkman that transforms into the robot or robot transforms into a Walkman. So he's not even a vehicle.
Yeah.
He's just a tape player. And I wanted that so bad. And my parents found a knockoff version for me at like some Mexican flea market. And that's not even a joke. We lived in the Rio Grande Valley. It was legit a Mexican flea market. And I loved that thing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the real Soundwave.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously a cassette player today is so outdated, it wouldn't even be a real thing. But he was in one of the movies, the Soundwave was. I think it was like a boombox that turned into.
I think I was just thinking as you're saying this. I'm also thinking about the car in Toy Story. I would do the car in Toy Story
Which one?
The remote controlled car.
Oh yeah, that's pretty cool.
That I would. Yeah,
Bumblebee comes kind of close to something like that concept.
Yeah,
maybe.
Anyway. But yeah, so boring answer for me. I'd be a two seater car.
Okay, awesome. We'll have to check out the next Transformers movie.
The one that's just been... There's loads of movies
actually
coming out.
I don't
want to
see the cartoon one. I'm not into that. Well, that looks like a kid's movie. I want to see the next live action one.
I think Gladiator 2.
Okay.
I think Wicked.
You know what we need? We need to do another movie swap.
Okay.
We just need to plan out enough so we have enough time, each of us, to actually... You know,
another movie spot.
Yeah, I don't want to do it because sometimes I'm like, hey, can you get together next week? I don't want to give 1 week's notice. We need some time. Okay. So,
well, without a doubt, I'm going to Gladiator 2 on opening evening.
Okay. Maybe I'll be there with you.
Convinced it's going to be a great movie.
Yeah. All right. King Kong's got nothing on Denzel and Gladiator 2.
Exactly.
If you enjoy the podcast, you're a listener, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts. stars on Spotify, but write some fun, juicy words in favor of the podcast on Apple Podcasts or on social media. We'd love to see that as well. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.